Welcome to Issue 2 of 5-Minute Journal Club, TROP2-directed antibody-drug conjugates in the management of non-small cell lung cancer. This is medical oncologist Dr. Neil Love. I met with Dr. Jacob Sands from the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute in Boston to discuss TROP2 ADCs, including datopotamab deruxtecan, which was recently approved in recurrent EGFR mutant lung cancer and was previously approved in hormone receptor positive metastatic breast cancer in January. And once again, medical oncologists must quickly come up to speed on how to employ a newly approved agent, and importantly, how to prevent and ameliorate adverse events. I asked Dr. Sands the specific approaches described in the March 2024 paper in Cancer Treatment Reviews and a presentation at the 2024 ASCO meeting, and on both papers, Dr. Sands was a co-author.
There are three important toxicities with Dato-DXd to focus on, and so this is what we focused on. Now, one being mucositis or stomatitis, and this is the most common. Now, there's a lot still being developed and looked at as far as how we can further reduce that. Now, keep in mind, a grade 1 stomatitis is actually asymptomatic. That means you see something, but the patient is not necessarily bothered by that. I think that's an important distinction, because when we're looking at the percent of patients that have stomatitis, I think often people are picturing something that's really bothersome to patients. Now, that being said, a grade 2 can be really bothersome to patients. And so this is often reported out as grade 1-2. And then, of course, there's grade 3. But in the grade 1-2, you know, many of those are grade 1. So I highlight that because just in level setting, how much of a problem this really is for patients. Now, that being said, I mean, there are certainly a number of patients with grade 2 as well. And this is where the symptomatic comes in. And so things like steroid mouth rinses are being tried, and it seems like this may help patients. Holding ice chips in their mouth, I mean, during the time of infusion might help in reducing the blood flow to the mucous membranes at the time of giving the drug. Now, the half-life of the drug is fairly long, so I don't think that in itself, you know, that alone won't solve it. And this is where the steroid mouth rinses are also important. But even just mouth ice chips for kind of helping with the symptoms as well. I'm hopeful that with this, you know, it will reduce stomatitis. It's not going to resolve it. It's not going to make it not an issue. And so the other thing to mention is that, you know, for some patients, when they initially start their treatment, they have some stomatitis that can actually get better as you get a few doses in. But for patients that really are not tolerating that, or where you're concerned about it, then I think dose reducing is okay. We did see in the dose expansion cohort of Dato-DXd, this was looking at the 4, 6, and 8 milligram per kilogram dose levels, that at the 4 milligram per kilogram dose level, we still see efficacy. So I think the therapeutic window on this is not so small as to lose it entirely if dose reducing. And you know, there are sometimes patients that you need to dose reduce, and I would certainly consider a dose reduction rather than just stopping the drug. But with some of these measures, you can maybe get through the first few, and then things can improve a bit. Now, another one is ocular surface toxicity, and I say it that way because there's still more for us to learn about exactly what's going on there as well. I mean, the mechanism of action for developing this toxicity, to my knowledge, is not yet fully described. But I can say that clinically, what patients experience is something like dry eyes. And that can mean a lot of things. I've had multiple discussions with ophthalmologists, and of course, they can get far more specific than me as to some of what's really going on. And involving ophthalmology, I think, is important. Now, not important because of, you know, huge problems. In fact, the majority of patients, just using lubricating eye drops is sufficient. And, you know, that is enough to control their symptoms, and it's never a bigger deal than that for most patients. But, you know, you want to make sure you're not missing something. And one of the great things about the field of ophthalmology is that they can actually see everything that they take care of. So the ophthalmologist can do an exam and give us much more information. Now, generally speaking, you know, I think that it's recommended that patients see an ophthalmologist before starting Dato-DXd. Realistically, you know, we can't delay start on patients. And I think it's okay to start. It's good to put in a referral, but certainly at the time where patients have any symptoms whatsoever, then I would just put in a referral then. And even if it takes a month to get into ophthalmology, I think that's okay. For most people, using lubricating eye drops is fine. Now, if someone's having vision changes or like a beefy red eye, as I've heard ophthalmology say, you know, in those situations, that's a more urgent, they need to see ophthalmology urgently. And I think the ophthalmologist will respond to those urgent referrals. But just the sensation of dry eye, you know, that's probably fine, even if it takes a month. Now, the other one to discuss is interstitial lung disease. And we see this across the deruxtecan payload portfolio as well. Now, this is a bit more complicated because, you know, interstitial lung disease, we don't actually really have tissue in many of these cases. This is a clinical scenario, and there are a lot of things that can cause that. And so I think this is an area that needs more study as well. But we certainly see it enough and consistently across the portfolio that it is a very important part of the consent and of the discussion to say that this is in fact a risk. And I think it's important that the treating teams look out for it. At the same time, it's a complex enough thing that if someone suspects that they see interstitial lung disease, I think it's also then very important to consider what could all the other things be and to work up anything else that could possibly go on. This is really hard in patients that have a smoking history and with lung cancer because we see waxing and waning inflammatory findings in the lungs all the time. And so deciphering what represents interstitial lung disease and what are potentially waxing and waning inflammatory findings, especially when, you know, there may be multiple but kind of smaller in volume across the lungs. Is that an early ILD or is that just something that's going to kind of come and go? And so involving a multidisciplinary team and doing some kind of workup for that, I think is really important while you have the opportunity for it.
An important variable for all systemic therapies in oncology is CNS activity, and at the 2024 ASCO meeting, CNS findings from the phase 2 TROPION-Lung05 study evaluating Dato-DXd in patients with actionable mutations with prior targeted treatment and platinum-based chemotherapy were presented. The global PFS was very similar in patients with and without baseline brain metastases, and 4 of 18 patients with baseline untreated brain mets experienced objective partial responses. I asked Dr. Sands his take on this data set.
It's really important when looking at intracranial activity to get clarity first on which patients had any prior radiation and which of these metastases are untreated. Now, broadly speaking, what we see across multiple studies of the deruxtecan payload, this is true for patritumab deruxtecan and datopotamab deruxtecan, we see intracranial responses of around 30% when looking at untreated brain mets. And you know, that's not RECIST criteria necessarily, because by intracranial RECIST, a nodule has to be at least a centimeter to be considered measurable. But any sized nodules where we see clear reduction in the size of them, you know, broadly speaking, we see about 30%. Now, that is important to consider because that means if you're seeing somebody who has intracranial mets and they're asymptomatic, you can start the antibody drug conjugate. I mean, if it makes sense based upon other clinical criteria, you could start it and see if you see a response. At the same time, it means that even if you don't see anything in the brain, there may be an element of treating or of efficacy for microscopic disease that's not visible. Maybe you delay the time to seeing brain mets develop. But at the same time, it's important to recognize that it is not perfect in the brain. And so in a patient who's getting treated that has intracranial mets develop, but no systemic progression, in those patients, I would say, okay, maybe it's still working quite well systemically, but intracranial efficacy in this case is lost. And so I'd radiate, treat the brain met, but then continue the systemic therapy. And so that distinction, I think, is important. I really wouldn't rely on these drugs to treat the brain long term. I kind of anticipate that at some point there will be progression, but I think, you know, you monitor for that. So if there is something and you see a response, great, that can persist. And we certainly do see some patients with really deep responses or even resolution of brain mets on imaging of those that have not been previously radiated. So clear efficacy signal with this deruxtecan payload.
So, yeah, you know, it's kind of interesting in breast cancer. I guess there was the feeling that, you know, antibody drug conjugates are, quote, too big to get in the brain or whatever that means, all that, just, you know, blood-brain barrier. And then, you know, T-DXd, antibody drug conjugate, came along. But there was also a TKI, tucatinib, specifically focusing on the brain. So for a while, when patients have breast cancer, HER2 positive, had brain mets, they would get tucatinib. And now they're actually getting T-DXd because, surprisingly, they say very good responses in the brain. And I'm not saying T-DXd and Dato are the same thing, but it is interesting that you can, as you're saying, you actually can see responses in the brain to ADCs, maybe not perfect, but just the fact that they occur, I think, to me, is very interesting.
Absolutely. Across this whole deruxtecan payload, the deruxtecan payload portfolio, so T-DXd, Dato-DXd, patritumab deruxtecan, ifinatumab deruxtecan as well, we see that. Now, we also have the Zai Labs ADC, which is a DLL3 antibody drug conjugate in small cell lung cancer that has shown intracranial efficacy. And so these antibody drug conjugates, we are seeing them make it across and have an impact. But again, you know, I do think it's important to distinguish that we sometimes also see intracranial only progression, and that in those situations, it doesn't mean that we've lost the efficacy of the drug itself and clinical benefit. And so treating the brain alone and then continuing that systemic therapy, I think, is an important consideration.
Antibody drug conjugates are rapidly becoming one of the most studied oncologic treatment strategies, and a common question being addressed in clinical trials is the role of combinations with immunotherapy. I asked Dr. Sands about three related papers. The first, a February 2024 paper in Clinical Cancer Research, looking at the impact of the anti-PD-L1 agent atezolizumab in non-small cell lung cancer, suggesting that TROP2 is an important mediator of primary resistance to checkpoint inhibitors, and then two papers on the 2025 ASCO meeting. The first, a phase 1b study of Dato-DXd with pembrolizumab with or without platinum chemotherapy. TROPION-Lung07 is a phase 3 study evaluating the combination of Dato-DXd and pembrolizumab in patients with TPS scores less than 50% compared to pembrolizumab plus chemotherapy. And the TROPION-Lung08 study comparing pembrolizumab alone or with Dato-DXd in patients with TPS scores over 50%. Finally, we discussed data from the TROPION-Lung04 study, which combined Dato-DXd with rilvegostomig, a bispecific antibody targeting PD-1 and TIGIT. This combination demonstrated an impressive waterfall plot and a response rate of 45% in patients with squamous cell and 62% in non-squamous cell. Anything you want to say in general about this idea of combining ADC plus IO, you know, in urothelial bladder cancer? Currently, that's the first-line treatment strategy, metastatic disease, and enfortumab vedotin plus pembrolizumab. What about in non-small cell? Any thoughts about the rationale behind it and where you think it might be heading?
I think it's a compelling combination, and seeing the combination with chemotherapy, I would love to see some synergy to that. And we'll have to see if we notice an improvement in the tail of the curve. These immunotherapy agents, these checkpoint inhibitors, are really an absolute home run for a subset of patients. I have a patient on pembrolizumab who got 2 years of therapy, and that was more than 5 years ago, has never had another systemic agent for metastatic non-small cell lung cancer. So And that was in the second line. And that was one, that was when it was first approved. And that's true across the checkpoint inhibitors. We see these very long-term patients with potentially cured of their incurable disease. And that subset doesn't need the help. But that's a small subset. And so everything higher on the tail of the curve is what needs help. And if we can see these impact that tail, that would be very exciting. But at a minimum, I think seeing an improvement in the median and see the majority of patients end up developing longer responses and more durability to the combination would be exciting to see. Now we're going to have to compare these to what we would anticipate getting from the standard chemotherapy agents. And I think especially when we're seeing the high PD-L1 expression, looking at checkpoint inhibitor alone and the checkpoint inhibitor plus ADC, you know, of course, the natural thing will be to compare that to what we would anticipate from the current standard chemo options. But exciting developments in that first line.
And of course, your colleague at Dana-Farber and Breast Cancer, Sarah Tulaney, at the ASCO meeting presented what I think is going to be a practice-changing trial looking at ADC plus IO first-line therapy triple-negative breast cancer. This is sacituzumab, which beat out standard chemotherapy plus an IO, and it's probably going to become standard of care. What do you think about Dato-DXd in early stage disease? You think it might have a future role as neoadjuvant or adjuvant therapy?
The NeoCOAST studies was presented by Tina Casconi and a combination with Dato-DXd in that space. We saw pretty impressive major pathologic responses and path CR, even in squamous, which remember, TROPION-Lung01, we actually saw worse outcomes with Dato-DXd relative to docetaxel. But in the neoadjuvant space, saw pretty impressive responses with a TROP2-directed ADC. So there's still a lot for us to learn. I mean, that hint from NeoCOAST-2 was a very promising suggestion of real efficacy in that neoadjuvant space.
To conclude this issue of 5-Minute Journal Club, we take a breath and turn to one of the many recent review articles on antibody-drug conjugates in lung cancer. This one from the April 16th issue of Current Oncology Reports by Taufig et al. And as always, I was looking for instructive graphics, and this paper shows one on the mechanism of action of ADCs and another on various antibody targets being studied.
There's so much going on in the space with ADCs right now. First of all, an antibody-drug conjugate has three very important components. One is the antibody. And so that is antibody is ideally something that binds to an antigen that is plentiful on the tumor cells, that is specific to tumor cells, is accessible from a circulating antibody drug conjugate. And so by binding that antigen, binding that receptor on the tumor cell surface, ideally and importantly, then gets internalized. And it is the internalization of the compound that then provides the opportunity, typically within a lysosome, to release that payload. Now, the linker I'll come back to, but the linker is what holds that payload to the antibody. Now, the payload right now, you know, anything that's discussed as far as antibody-drug conjugates is typically a chemotherapy payload. So these antibody-drug conjugates are largely a targeted cytotoxic at this time. That's often a topoisomerase inhibitor payload across multiple different ADCs. There are a few different commonly used cytotoxic mechanisms of action, though. So that payload gets released. It leads to interaction within the cell nucleus and ultimately killing the tumor cell. And that then spills the cell contents into that the environment around it. And then commonly, that payload can have a bystander effect. Now, not all payloads do, but the payloads that have a bystander effect essentially means that they're membrane permeable. So when they get spilled to the area around that cell, if there are other tumor cells that do not express that surface receptor, they can still be susceptible to that bystander effect of the payload that then crosses into these other surrounding cells. And so in that sense, at least hypothetically, you don't need the tumor receptor. You don't need the antigen that is the target of the antibody. You don't need that on every single cell, but you do need it kind of spread throughout that tumor environment. Now, I'm highlighting that in part because we have not found the IHC staining of these receptors does not broadly correlate with the outcomes, which of course raises questions because that's what we're targeting. Now, the linker I said I'd come back to, I think in many ways the linker can be the most complicated of this because you want a linker that holds that payload to the antibody firmly enough that you don't just have circulating payload, that's just giving chemotherapy, but actually you want it holding it until that ADC gets delivered to the tumor cells, and then you want it actually releasing that payload when it's in the right place. And so there's a fine dialing of that linker, and so to get that just right to release the payload within the tumor environment. There are an array of antigens that we're targeting with these ADCs. There are things that are very common, like TROP2 expression. That's common across multiple different tumor types. And there are a couple drugs on the forefront, but an array of different antibody-drug conjugates that are, in fact, targeting TROP2 expression. There are also targets that are more common within small cell lung cancer, for example. So B7H3 has some ADCs developed against that. CES6, we're now seeing. And so these different antigens on tumor cells, drugs are developed depending upon the prevalence of those and concentration within different tumor types. Of course, we have DLL3 within small cell lung cancer that has made a real splash now with tarlatamab and some of the other T-cell engagers. But of course, there are also antibody-drug conjugates that are in development in different stages of development that are targeting DLL3 as well for neuroendocrine carcinomas. Now, things like patritumab deruxtecan, this is a HER3 antibody-drug conjugate, and we see HER3 overexpression or increased expression in tumors that are being treated with targeted therapy for EGFR mutations, HER1. And so with that directed treatment, we see increased expression of HER3, making that a good target then for a HER3 antibody-drug conjugate. So depending upon the specific tumors and certain clinical scenarios, when we're seeing increased expression of those receptors, then that makes for a potential target. Now, that being said, not all antigens are necessarily good targets because they do need to be something that ultimately ends up getting internalized. And so there are multiple steps to this. But as this technology has been further developed, there are more and more targets that we're finding to then be able to target with antibody drug conjugates. It's exciting to see this class of drug, the antibody drug conjugates, that are giving us a lot of examples of what looks like a real step forward. This is just the first generation of ADCs, and I'm hopeful that as next generations develop out, we'll take even bigger steps forward. But I think as a class of drugs and a platform, we're seeing clear demonstration of efficacy, of greater delivery of cytotoxics, and in the future, we'll likely see other payloads that are even more novel.